I'm Mike Pesca, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. He's on assignment at a conference on climate change. On this show, we've talked about the tumultuous Mexican elections and the effect of immigration on both sides of the border. But now, let's talk about what's really important in terms of U.S.-Mexican relations. Do burritos qualify as authentic Mexican food? And is Cinco de Mayo an important holiday in Mexico? What better time to ask it than on Cuatro de Mayo? Our guide is Gustavo Arellano, who writes a weekly column called Ask a Mexican. It's carried in the Orange County Weekly, very popular, and he now has a book also entitled Ask a Mexican. The column provides a safe space, as it were, for the rest of us non-Mexicans, and we'll get the proper phrase for that, to ask questions to a Mexican about Mexico. And remember the adage, there are no stupid questions. So if you have ever wanted to ask a Mexican, now is your opportunity, as we are joined by Gustavo. Hello, welcome to WNYC.
Gracias for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our number, come on, call in, ask a Mexican, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Cinco de Mayo, is that really big in Mexico?
It's not that big in Mexico, and it's much bigger here in the United States. And it was the reason for is because in the 1960s, college students, they wanted a holiday to celebrate at the end of the school year that was Mexican, and so they decided on Cinco de Mayo.
So it sounds a lot like St. Patrick's Day in Ireland, which is much more popular here. Of course, there are many more Irish people here than there are in Ireland. But is it becoming more popular in Mexico because Americans celebrate it more?
Yeah, I mean, in the book, I actually have an entire question about Cinco de Mayo, the history, and why ultimately I think it's a futile holiday and it's pointless. But down in Mexico now, they are celebrating it more because of the constant back and forth between the border with Mexicans.
So the experience of Mexicans as they live life in America, the United States of America, influences them back home in Mexico.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
In this era of really open borders, you have Mexican culture affecting the United States and American culture affecting Mexico, and especially the continued migration of people to and from Mexico and the United States. Yeah.
You know, I've been reading your column in actually literally in the Orange County Weekly because I'm in California a lot, and it was just a great idea. I wondered, well, is he going to really follow through with this and just engage some of the really impertinent questions? And you have racists ask racist questions in this column, and you take them head on. Do any of them ever bother you?
No, not at all. To me, the question is to water off my back. And the book has racist questions, really racist questions, actually, sexist questions. It has humorous questions, informative questions, questions about dwarves, transvestites, etymology. Everything you could ever possibly want to know about Mexicans is in my book.
Like wrestling, why are the masked ones always so popular?
Yeah, why luchadores, lucha libre, why the mask is so popular in Mexico. And the reason that being is because there's a lot of traditional fiestas or plays that both the Spaniards and the Aztecs had that always involved masks. So nowadays, though, that manifests itself into the ultimate battle, which is that in the wrestling ring.
How do you say from parts unknown in Spanish?
De partes que...
Do they say that? Do they use the same phrase like they do here?
No, that's an idiom. I'm sure Mexican Spanish has its own idiom. I can't think of it right now, though.
You know, as I look through the book and as I've read the column, I think these questions kind of break down into categories. You got the real nasty racist type questions. Then you got the questions of honest people befuddled who want a safe zone. And then you also have a category of rhetorical gotcha type questions, you know, as if you're on Meet the Press and they're Russert saying things like, hey, how come Mexico's own immigration laws are so harsh? How do you answer that?
Absolutely. The reason I say that is, yeah, Mexico's immigration laws are harsh. The question is in the book. And I say, look at what happened to Mexico because of harsh immigration laws. It became Mexico. Meanwhile, the United States, since we have our very liberal immigration policy, we're the United States. Mexico used to have a lot of immigration in the early 1900s. In fact, most of what we consider Mexican culture, accordion music, umpa music, the food, even the quinceañeras, it's all European influences. And there's also significant populations of Lebanese, Chinese, and Jews in Mexico that influence Mexican culture. But after the Mexican Revolution, Mexico stopped allowing really immigrants into this country. And now look what happened to the country. It's just Mexico.
Someone just told me that Salma Hayek is half Lebanese. I think that's very important to put out there.
But oh, yeah.
those categories I break it down to, racist, honest questions, gotcha. Are those the category, the way that you would break down the kind of questions you receive? Are there any categories I'm missing, or are any of them more popular than others?
In the book, it's broken down by the most popular topics: sex, language, food, work, ethnic relations, immigration. And inside those topics, then, yeah, I'll get the racist ones, the sexist ones. I get every single type. And it's not just gabachos, what Mexicans call gringos. It's not just gabachos who write in the racist questions. In the book, there's a couple of questions by Mexican-Americans where they're very, very racist against African-Americans. In fact, shockingly so. And I've been criticized for answering those types of questions. Latinos will say, why do you have to show that Mexicans are racist? And my response is, it's in the book, really, that you have to show that Mexicans are as human as everyone else. So they're going to be saints, sure, but they're also going to be sinners. They're going to have the same foibles as everyone else. And that's something that in this immigration debate, we miss out. Mexicans are either typecast as saints or as sinners, but the truth is somewhere in between.
You know, that is a case where the writers who write in, it doesn't reflect well on them, if no matter what their heritage is. But do you ever, in your answers, sort of take a hard look at the Mexican community or the Mexican American community and say, this is a reason we do it, but maybe it's something that we do wrong? Sort of air the dirty laundry in your column.
Absolutely. In the book, I have questions about Mexican homophobia, antagonism with people of African descent, not just African Americans here in the United States, with machismo, with the things that I consider to be ills in Mexican society. Again, Mexicans are not saints. They're not sinners either, but the truth is somewhere in between. And the book, airs out the dirty laundry, but also debunks the stereotypes that people may have against Mexicans that are simply not true. And all of it's done in a sarcastic, sardonic manner, in a way that allow me to shine better lights on the truth.
The way Dan Savage writes about homosexuality in, I don't know if it's in the
OC. Savage Love, yeah.
Yeah, in Savage Love, which is also a syndicated column in alternative newspapers. Speaking with Gustavo Arellano, am I right with that name?
You're perfectly fine.
I try. Like pesca, which means, I think, what does it mean in Spanish?
Pasco? Pascua?
No, pesca, P-E-S-C-A.
P-E-S-C-A, pasca.
It's like a fish.
Pascua, if you added a U, pasca is actually Passover, but pasca, that's more Italian, I think.
It is. I should add a U, at least for...
yeah, Mike Passover.
At least during the Pesach. All right, you want to ask a Mexican? This is exactly representative of the kinds of questions you get. Dave in Long Branch, New Jersey, go ahead and ask a Mexican.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
There's a lot of Mexicans here, mostly guys, I guess they're working. They're always so short.
All right. The question. That's the blunt kind of question you get. Go ahead.
No, and especially in the New York, New Jersey area, a lot of the Mexicans that you folks are getting are people from the state of Puebla and Hidalgo, people who are mostly, for the most part, have a lot of indigenous blood, and they're the first people from their states to go over to Mexico, or rather to the United States. And, of course, indigenous Mexicans, they're going to be shorter than Mexicans with more Spanish blood in them. The Mexicans from northern Mexico, they're going to be taller. So that's why the Mexicans you guys have over there, they're shorter than the regular Mexicans here.
Zach from Old Tappan, New York. Go ahead, Zach. Ask a Mexican.
One of my favorite foods is a burrito, and I remember from high school Spanish, it means small burrow or mm-hmm. little burrow. I'd like to know the origin of the name.
All right, Mexican etymology.
The burrito comes from the borderlands, specifically Sonora. And this is a legend because there's various theories behind it, like with the same thing with gringo. But supposedly it's called a burrito because the men who would eat these burritos, they would go on burros up to the mountains to mine their copper and silver, and so they would keep the burritos next to their burros so they could keep warm. That's one of the legends behind it. I don't know if that's really true, but that's a historical record for you.
Thank you.
All right, now you got to tell me how the Fig Newton became a Newton and what other kinds of Newton are there, but I guess that's not for Ask a Mexican. What about the burrito? Is it an authentic Mexican food?
It is authentically Mexican, but it's from the border region.
Mm-hmm.
And the border region, of course, it's, you know, Mexican-American, really. It's its own sort of society. It's not really Mexican. It's not really American. So the traditional foods, or the foods that Americans have traditionally thought of as Mexican, fajitas, burritos, enchiladas, tacos, chimichangas, that's all, and specifically, it's Sonoran cuisine. In fact, if you see the old cookbooks from the early 20th century here of Mexican cooking, they would call it Sonoran cuisine because it comes directly from the state of Sonora. And Mexican cuisine, it's, you know, it's very, very diverse. In fact, I envy you guys out in New York because you have so many people from Puebla. People from Puebla make a type of sandwich called the semita. It's called a semita poblana, and it's the best sandwich you could ever have.
We are speaking with Gustavo Arellano. He is the author of Ask a Mexican. If you would like to ask a Mexican, call in 212-433-9692, 212-433-9692. Before we take a call, let me ask you another question about cuisine. Taco Bell, is that an affront to Mexican culture, heritage, and food?
In a way, it is. They had the whole campaign with the Taco Bell Chihuahua, and I talk a little bit about the history of Taco Bell in the book. There's a really small segment devoted to it, but ultimately it's not an affront anymore because there was a boycott by Latino activists in 2004 against Taco Bell because they didn't want to pay their tomato pickers more money, but now they are doing that. So in fact, all Mexicans should eat at Taco Bell, even though the cuisine is not very good.
It helps the Mexicans. Nick from Cliffside Park, New Jersey, from Taco Bell. It's a real serious question. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, great. Obviously, in my opinion anyway, the government in Mexico and the economic system in Mexico is even more corrupt and unjust than we have up in America. So compared to Mexico, this is almost a kind of heaven, perversely.
Yeah.
If the brightest and the best and the most ambitious and the most industrious and the most clever and the most active Mexicans do everything they can to escape into the United States, which makes sense, I guess, on an individual basis, but the system that allows that to happen, doesn't that take the steam out of any impetus to really have a kind of revolution there in Mexico? And look at the last election. In my opinion, that was a stolen election, far more, you know, than even in the U.S.
And Nick, you
How
speak of this. You
change?
And Nick, you're talking about the brain drain and the initiative drain as someone who hopes for the best for Mexico,
sure,
correct?
The people who are going to be uppity, the people who are going to make changes happen, who are going to cause revolution, you know, they have that kind of energy and that kind of spark and soul and spirit, those people are going to try to come here before they're going to change that country, and I can't blame them as individuals.
All right. Sorry, I had to click off. Gustavo Arellano.
No, not a problem. A couple questions in the book address that issue. If people are waiting for a Mexican revolution, I urge them to wait until 2010. 1810 was the War for Mexican Independence. 1910 was the Mexican Revolution. I'm sure 2010 will bring something even better than all those things. And in terms of brain drain, no, there is a brain drain happening in Mexico. Everyone's going to the United States. That said, these brilliant Mexicans are sending billions of dollars back to Mexico to revitalize the economy, and they're also changing the way government is done. The fact that the PRI no longer rules Mexico after 75 years of dominance, it was in large part because of these immigrants learning about democracy here in the United States and taking it back to Mexico.
So, Gustavo, you get questions from Mexicans to a Mexican, right?
Absolutely. I get questions from Mexicans, African Americans, Asians, Canadians for some strange reason, everyone, young, old, rich, poor, racist, good people, everyone in this country is curious about Mexicans, and my book answers those questions.
All right, I think Aaron?
Hey, how you doing? As a Mexican-American, I have actually a real important question. Who's the greatest Mexican fighter ever?
That's an easy one. Julio Cesar Chavez, the great.
Exactly. Now, what do you think about De La Hoya Mayweather?
Mayweather is the much better boxer, but I think De La Hoya is going to call upon his Mexican spirit and just, you know, bring out one more and win. I actually think he's going to win.
La raza, I say.
La raza.
Hey, what secret code did you guys just say to each other?
Okay, Julio Cesar Chavez is one of the greatest.
No. La raza, ese.
Oh, la raza. La raza is just like the race. It's and that's shorthand for La Raza Cósmica, which is this concept created by Mexican intellectuals in the 1920s, saying that the Mexican race is the greatest race because it had the blood of Africans, Asians, whites, and also mestizos. And some people try to equate that with Nazism. The difference, though, is that this ideology of La Raza, it's not murderous or racist toward other people like Nazism.
It's pretty equivalent to black pride.
It's exactly what it is. Black pride, brown pride. That's how it manifested itself here in the United States.
Howard in Manhattan, what's your question for our Mexican?
I was a child 60 years ago, and the water wasn't safe to drink in Mexico. Why is it still not safe to drink?
It's actually a little bit safer now. The reason why it wasn't probably as safe was because of technology. And now that Mexico just got into the 1920s, the water is going to be a little bit better. Not as much. You have to be careful with it. Not only that, the potable water system in Mexico is so antiquated as to not be even being able to support toilet paper being flushed down the toilet.
Has your column become so popular that other ethnicities are clamoring for, I don't know, question a Croat or inquire as to an Azerbaijani?
There are actually some columns that cite me directly as inspiration. Ask a Korean-American, ask a Cuban-American, ask a Muslim. Those are the three blogs that I know cite me. Then there's other people that I think ripped me off, like Radar's The Ethnicist, their online-only thing. It seems like a blatant ripoff. But again, I didn't create this. Even you go back to Dave Chappelle, he had a segment called Ask a Black Dude. So it's, I think nowadays with people wanting really to be curious about what's going on in different cultures, they seek an expert, and there's people brave enough to say, hey, I'm a black dude, I'm a Mexican, I'm a Korean-American, ask me. And so people send in the question.
The whole formulation of ask, I don't know where it goes to, but I know during the presidential campaign of the 50s, there was ask the president, and Eisenhower would answer stage questions from the public, but it's definitely a trope. Let's and sometimes you get reader feedback that expand upon your answers, right?
Yeah, with some questions, I do allow people, I will print the responses. So the book also has responses from people who sent in questions. The latest one in the column specifically was the logo for Ask a Mexican. It's this big, fat Mexican guy with a sombrero, bandoliers, gold tooth, mustache. I call him the eternal Mexican, the Mexican that's been in the mind of Americans for about 150 years. So a lot of people find it offensive because it is a caricature. So I asked my readers, do you want me to keep the logo? And the overwhelming majority said yes. And so I printed the responses, and I also printed the responses of people who didn't like the logo but and had good articulate reasons behind it.
All right, let's try to do a little bit of a lightning round. Jack in Queens, your question.
Yes, I'd like to ask, Mexicans are raised naturally in their school to learn about, have a grievance against the United States, since, after all, we did steal half of what was Mexico before 1847.
Absolutely. All countries have their boogeyman. In all textbooks across the world, you'll hear about the evil enemy, or, you know, in the history and whatever. And, of course, Mexico's evil enemies are Spain and the United States. It's natural for humans to hate those people who they've gone to war with in the past.
So the question is it good for the United States to allow another minority group with grievance to come here?
Well, that's the basic. That's like such an eternal question. I can only give you 30 seconds for it. It's really underlying the whole debate. But go ahead.
Yeah, all groups, when they came to this country, I mean, in the 1800s, you had anarchists from Eastern Europe and everything who hated the United States coming here and blowing, you know, assassinating McKinley and so forth. Immigrants, when they come here, they might have grievances against the United States, but the great thing about America is that it makes you into an American. So you might have grievances. Hey, my parents were immigrants. They came to this country. My dad came here illegally. Now he loves America.
All right.
It always happens.
Gustavo Arellano, author of Ask a Mexican. Thanks very much, Gustavo.
Thank you so much.
And this program was produced by Jim Colgan, Lisa Allison, Priya George, and Kate Hines. Help this week from Nadia Zanoni, Alexis Parada, Spencer Wilking, and Lucas Rickhouse. Debbie Dougherty is at the audio controls. Nuala McGovern's the executive producer. Brian Lehrer is back on Monday. I'm Mike Pesca.